For those looking for a liberatory martial arts learning approach and curriculum, we've created Liberation Martial Arts. It doesn't just teach you martial arts, it's also an approach to learning movement skills. The whole point of our program is to remove the need for a coach, to liberate you from the need of top-down instruction and toxic gyms. If you have a coach and also have a gym, then you can apply our learning approach to improve your progress. Or maybe you also need a supplemental martial arts community as a counter to the commercial gym you go to. You can actually apply our learning approach to learn anything, and our practitioners are. They're applying it to all sorts of things, whether physical, mental, or even personal. It's just a radically different approach to everything. Sign up for Liberation Martial Arts at the Southpaw Pod Patreon, or support us by signing up for one of the other tiers, and help us support this project while also getting access to bonus content like early releases of SDS9 with transcripts. SDS9 Season 3 was recorded from the beginning of 2023 to early 2024 and was first published on Patreon. Now that we're done with the season, the entire season is being released all at once on the Southpaw public feed. Find Season 4 on the Southpaw Pod Patreon. This is Southpaw Deep Space Nine Season 3, where we analyze Deep Space Nine and Star Trek from a political and historical lens, episode by episode. I'm watching DS9 with fresh eyes, and Scott is our veteran Trek fan. We are discussing Season 3 of DS9, Episode 14, Heart of Stone. Scott, tell us about this episode.
So, Kira and Odo are returning from a peace talk at Prophet's Landing, a Bajoran colony near the Cardassian border. Odo plays with Kira that she turned down a dinner party invite, and though he doesn't eat, nor does he like people, he would have liked to have had the option to turn it down, which is something I very much relate to. Invite me to something so I can say I'm not going. They detect what they think is a Maquis attack in progress and go after them in the Mekong, which is the runabout that they're using. As you probably remember, the Maquis are the disenfranchised Federation peeps and Bajorans that disengaged from the Cardassian demilitary zone and stuff like that. The pursuit has Kira and Odo going to an unstable moon. Then we have Nog on Deep Space Nine going to meet Ben and offers him a ton of latinum. Nog has just become an adult, according to his culture, and he wants to purchase an apprenticeship under Ben. Ben says that it's not how it works. It's not that simple. You know, you can't buy an apprenticeship with me. You'd have to join Starfleet. And Nog's like, yeah, I want to be in Starfleet. But as the Ferengi are not part of the Federation of Planets, he would need a letter of a recommendation from a commander and pass a test and do a whole bunch of stuff. But guess who's a commander? Ben. So Ben says that he will consider it. Back on the moon, they are searching for this fugitive. Odo finds Kira. She's stuck in like a living crystal, and like the living crystal is spreading. They try to shoot the crystal, but it gets bigger. They can't beam out because there's too much radio interference. So Odo has to find a place to get the connection right so he can figure out something. And we go back, and Nog, Rom, and Quark are working at the bar, and Nog goes to see Jake, and Jake is like, oh, I heard you were playing a prank, that you wanted to be part of Starfleet. And Nog is like, no, that's not true. I want to be Starfleet. And Jake is like, why? He's like, I don't want to talk about it. Back on the moon, Odo worries that the distress signal that they're sending will take too long to get to Deep Space Nine. And then off screen, the escape supposedly Maquis shoots at Kira. We don't see them. We just know that it came from a strange angle. The crystal is getting bigger. And back on Deep Space Nine, Ben is hesitant to write a recommendation letter. You know, Nog has been problematic on the ship. He has just been a bit of a nuisance. So he decides that he's going to give him a job and see how he does. And it's hinted at that he's giving him this job because of he's a Ferengi, but he has him do an inventory of valuable goods and to write down everything. And then, you know, back to Kira and Odo, Kira's going to turn into a crystal in 12 hours. Kira's getting really sad, but Odo believes that he can make a crystal vibe frequency machine to attack the crystal, you know, because crystals have vibrations and stuff, according to vibes. On Deep Space Nine, Dax gives Nog the job to do inventory on a manifest of a cargo bay. Nog is left to do the manifest by the end of the day to count everything. Kira is getting more and more crystallized. Odo says they need to go back in time just so he can go kayaking. Apparently, Odo has been kayaking with Miles, and Odo makes Kira smile. But Kira's really starting to falter. The Kira we know is disappearing. The platitudes aren't working. Back on Deep Space Nine, Nog's inventory was impeccable. In fact, he found stuff that they didn't even know about. He did a great job. And back to the moon, the crystal is getting bigger and bigger, and the frequencies aren't working. Odo tells Kira how he got his name. He was named Odo Edda, which is an abbreviation for the Cardassian word nothing. So basically, people have just been calling him nothing his whole life because eventually they shortened it to just Odo. And Odo was like, I am nothing. And then, I'm going to get emotional. He realized that once he met the crew of Deep Space Nine, he no longer felt like nothing now that he knows everyone, especially Kira. Kira's going to die. Odo is not going to leave Kira. Kira gives Odo a direct order to leave, and he won't. And Odo finally explains that he loves Kira and has loved her for some time and just won't leave her to die alone. And Kira reciprocates, says that she loves him too, which, considering that her boyfriend died like a week ago, it's a little confusing. On Deep Space Nine, Ben decides that he's not going to write the letter for him. He still believes it's a scheme. So he goes to talk to Nog, and Nog, in a moment of real clarity and lucidity, explains that he doesn't want to be like his father, chasing profit his whole life for nothing. Him and his father are intelligent, science-minded, mathematic individuals. They don't have the lobes for chasing profit. Apparently, Rom, Nog's dad, is a mechanical genius, but the culture that he comes from doesn't care. Nog does not give a crap about business. He doesn't care about profit. He just, that's not what he wants for his life. He wants to do what he's good at. He wants to discover. He wants to learn. And it's actually a really well acted, nice monologue. And Ben will write the letter. And Odo and Kira regret not telling each other their love, but Odo realizes that something is afoot. Odo noticed that Kira has lied twice. Once about being shot, because he said earlier, foreshadowing, that it was the angle at which you shot was impossible, and also that once she said she was in love with him. He just knew that it's not the case. Because it's not Kira. It's the female changeling, not a McKee. What? And this is bad because now the changelings, the Dominion, have leverage that Odo is in love with Kira. They know what Odo cares about. And the female changeling just tells him that no one will ever love him because of who he is, and to just come back to the Great Link. And, you know, Odo finds Kira and keeps his feelings from her, and Quark tries to stop Nog from joining Starfleet, but Rom encourages him.
A note to our listeners. If you love the Southpaw Project, please support us and help us get paid for our labor by financially supporting us on Patreon. This will give you access to exclusive bonus content, like early releases of Southpaw Deep Space Nine, our fictional narrative podcast, Fighter's Brew, break-free versions of our shows without interruptions like you're hearing now, bonus articles, Fighter's Brew transcripts with extra content, Liberation Martial Arts Online, as well as our private chat group on Discord. You can also make one-time donations at Ko-Fi or show your solidarity by wearing our swag. You can find all pertinent links at southpawpod.com. This episode also gave me the feels. I was cutting up onions in some parts and yelling out loud and freaking out. And my wife was like, "What's wrong with you?" So continuing our discussion from the last episode, Life Support, we see more character development of Nog and more discrimination of Ferengi culture. This episode, it's not really subtle. There is discrimination and racism against Ferengi, especially from Sisko. Everyone talks about Ben's tender nature with his son. Well, now look at the tenderness he affords a Ferengi child. Not the same at all. It's a stark contrast.
Right. I was really disappointed rewatching. I was like, yo, you pulled a little bit of a racism here, bro.
It boils over to Sisko straight up getting abusive, cruel, and physical with Nog. You also realize Sisko is the villain in this ep. He gives Nog all these challenges and was going to fail him regardless of the outcome. The system was rigged against Nog. There's a commentary here.
Yeah.
DS9 will address racism, but not directly. It'll use proxies. We saw this in Life Support as well. And that's kind of my problem with sci-fi in general. I like that sci-fi can create thought experiments or talk about things without directly talking about things, but I also don't like that we don't directly talk about things because there's all these like sci-fi stories and fantasy stories and dystopian future stories talking about things that are happening now, but not that much media as far as like books, TV shows, movies that are directly addressing these things head on, right? So it's disproportionate, the media that's talking around these things versus the stuff that's talking directly about these things. And in that scene where things are rigged against him, there's nothing you can do to succeed. They're going to fail you regardless. And when it culminates to Sisko grabbing Nog, you got to remember, is even smaller than Jake. So he looks even more childlike. And the actor might actually even be younger, but like visually, he looks smaller and younger and more childlike, right? So when he grabs him and gets physical, and you could tell he's physically hurting Nog, that for me triggered a lot of old memories of me having felt that too, of somebody just grabbing me and shaking me around, right? It wasn't necessarily a black person, right? And this in the future, right, is trying to say like black people in the future can be racist against other races, right? Is using proxies. But for a lot of people watching this, that's going to trigger real life memories. It could be even for people who are not racialized, right? It could be like memories of a cruel parent or some authority figure who was cruel in some way or not affording them, to use your words, grace, right? When you were a child, why didn't they recognize I was a child? Why were they so hard on me, right? So it was a powerful scene. And I felt like Sisko played it where he intentionally was trying to be crueler, was acting in a way where he didn't want you to sympathize with them because he wanted you to see that anybody can be like this, that to something you were talking about, right? What implicit racism, implicit bias, it can be in people in a way where they're not even conscious or aware of it, right? And so I think that's why he was willing to play it that way.
I found Ben to be unnecessarily cruel in this episode and to be like, well, why should I let you have access to this special thing when you're just a Ferengi troublemaker? Like, you're good enough to be my son's best friend, but you want this? You want Starfleet?
That's for white people, right? It's like almost like talking about that privilege.
It was a very privileged thing. It hurt and it felt bad. It was, you know, again, watching the show as a kid, I didn't think much about it. I was just like, oh yeah, well, because the Ferengis, they're kind of dicks, you know? So that's why he's doing this. Where now you're like, this is a kid who, like, grew up seeing his dad being very smart, but being made fun of by everybody for being kind, and finally sees an opportunity and is like, I want to take advantage of this, and is doing what really would be an honor to anyone to have him, which is also like a trope of, you know, and if I'm out of line to talk about this, I apologize, but like, you know, the model minority when it comes to the army, the military, places where you know might mostly be white people for a long time, is that you gotta work double as hard and to do it. So, and then they get this child, like, oh, let's get the Ferengi to count the stuff that's worth a lot of money, the good shit. Like, that didn't come off a little way to you? Because it came off a little way to me. I did not like it.
And when you see the conclusion of it, you realize it was rigged against him, not just for him to fail, as in, regardless of how he did, they were going to fail him, but also setting him up for failure, meaning, oh, here's the chance for him to steal something.
Exactly.
I'm going to set him up in a way where he will steal something, because I know he will do it, right? So it's fucked up in a lot of ways. And for me, what I thought about was about the sham of meritocracy and college, right? It's about college and meritocracy. It doesn't matter who you are, it's open for everybody. But here's this racialized alien, right? And then you realize, no, there is no meritocracy. Starfleet, aka college, is not for you. It's a privilege. It's only for certain people, right? And you think about the exclusion of colleges for a long time, and it still excludes a lot of racialized people to this day. And yet we call this a meritocracy. So it reminded me a lot of that, of college, of higher education, and shutting people out and kind of holding a carrot saying, yeah, you could reach this. Come on. And pulling the carrot further and further away. But to your point, right, if we work twice as hard, maybe I could grab it anyway, even though I was meant to fail. And then instead of actually getting the carrot, you just end up getting the stick. And it's like, still no. Doesn't matter. You were never allowed to succeed. You were never allowed to enter this thing. Like, that's how it played out to me.
The Kobayashi Maru is a test designed where you're supposed to fail. It's to show what you do. Like, it is not supposed to be. It is like a simulation test where the ship goes down, and it's how you go for it, you know, and it's become like a metaphor, and, you know, Captain Kirk, like, you know, was able to not do, you know, did something with the Kobayashi Maru, but this wasn't even the Kobayashi Maru. It wasn't like, let's see how you fail. It's like, let's just see you fail.
I mean, to that point, right? That test is supposed to make you fail, yet I think more than once we've had characters cheat to beat that test, right? And when a white guy cheats, it's genius. Only when a racialized person does it is it cheating, or are they not allowed to cheat or pass at all, right? So there's a certain privilege to that too, right? white guys can straight up cheat. And they're genius. They're lauded. Whereas Nog isn't even allowed to do it the right way and succeed.
Yeah.
If you love the Southpaw Project, become one of our financial supporters. It'll help us supplement the cost of running this project, the incredible time and energy we put into it 7 days a week, and you'll be giving us some breathing room, not only to juggle Southpaw with our day jobs, but also to expand Southpaw into other areas. We can't exist without your contributions. Show your Southpaw solidarity by supporting us at southpawpod.com. Now, when Nog tells him, and to your point, this was some incredible acting by everybody, including the actor who plays Nog, but also Ben Sisko. Avery Brooks was amazing as the villain because he also emotes an awakening. So when Nog tells him he doesn't want to be like his father or his uncle, that they are trapped in a system they never asked to be born into, and he wants something different for himself, and is asking why Sisko and Starfleet have to constrain and limit him as well, because he's already limited in so many ways, that hit me hard. It's kind of a scene where two things are happening. It's one where the protagonist realizes he's been the villain doing real harm. And it's also one where you now recognize how much a child was going through. We saw Nog as an antagonist, but really he's been hurting as well. And hurting to see what his father has been reduced to and how much his father sacrifices for him.
It was a beautiful, beautiful scene. And I thought the getting like the sort of twist that like Nog is way more complicated than we allowed him to be was just fantastic.
And we also see Rom shows his love through sacrifice. He's tender in his own way through sacrifice, because that's like the only subtle way for him to show his love. And in other episodes, we've even seen Quark is limited by his conditions because he has shown times where he does want to be a loving person. He wants love. He wants to sacrifice for love. And he also wants to be kind, but he's conflicted at times because he's so conditioned for profit. So then when Rom comes to the aid of his son, because Rom gets it, we see that Rom is also this incredible fish forced to climb a tree. He's an engineer forced to be something he can't be. And he doesn't want that for his son. And so he goes to bat for his son. And going back to Quark too, Quark doesn't really even put up much resistance. He's like, okay, because like we talked about, Quark is also constrained by his conditions. This Nog subplot hit hard. Scott, what did you think of the Nog sub-story that kind of started in the last episode with life support and really culminated here where we saw a lot of growth? What did you think about that?
It's what made the episode for me because the A plot pulls this sort of trope that I don't care for, where like something happens but it's not what you think it is, or the stakes are raised but not really. And you know how much I hate the "it's not me" sort of thing. So if we just talk, if the episode was twisted and this was the A plot, this is a 4-star episode, because just give me more of, you know, subverting expectations and showing us that people are different than what you think they are. You know, I was a troubled kid. A lot of stuff happened to me. And I remember I actually ran into a high school teacher of mine many years later and at a bar. And I was like, "You were cruel to me, you know?" And they were like, "Well, you were such a shit." And I was like, I was 15. I was going through some shit. And you showed me no compassion. So yeah, I was a child. And that's why I really always try to like use the word child for people under the age of 18, show people under the age of 18 grace, remember like all the systemic reasons that bring people to whom they are, you know, because children be going through some shit. And so the Nog subplot, excellent. But the main part of the episode was like, whatever.
This episode, even with the main story, right, of the Odo Kira story, I still felt a lot. Because, like you said, you find out Odo means nothing. Odo explains how he was always dehumanized, even though he was a person, that he had nothing and was nothing. And so he accepted his name and label. He just believed his oppressors and believed their construct of him. And ultimately, he's not the authoritarian on the ship of these officers. We've been reminded several times there's a chain of command. And he's a cop, but he's not the top cop. Kira to Sisko to everyone else are his superiors. So he's not a cop over them. He's a cop over others now, but he's still serving humanoid superiors. His role and dynamic hasn't changed all that much. And in several episodes, they've shown what they think about non-humanoid life forms and were willing to kill Odo without hesitation. Hell, we talked about Bashir's view and perspective as a doctor, and he's always wanting to put people's health first, but Bashir was willing to kill Mirror Odo without hesitation. And even here, we see how Sisko sees a Ferengi child. So I saw a lot of overlap between the plot A and plot B. So Odo is nothing, has nothing. So he always felt shame and unworthy of being loved and having love. We feel that when he tells Kira he loves her, and how he reels back when he tells her, and then how he reacts when he thinks she loves him back. The acting by the actor who plays Odo was also stellar in this episode. And through this episode, we see Odo is a person also like Nog, not a fixed point in time. He's developing. Like this love story, it's been developing slowly. And it culminates in a confession, and you see how hard that was for Odo. It's really humanizing. Then when you realize it's not really Kira, but the female changeling playing a trick on him, it's just Odo suffering more humiliation and more indignity. When she tells him no changeling has harmed another changeling, there's a hypocrisy because look how she has harmed Odo.
Right.
A lot of the worst harms and traumas are invisible. Going back to some themes from life support, and in this episode, Odo is literally a child of the changelings. Metaphorically, but also perhaps literally, Odo is the child of the female changeling. So it goes back to parenting and children. A lot of the suffering children face is invisible. A lot of times, the person who harms children are the people who are closest to the child. Also, too many parents think so long as they don't physically harm their kids, it's not abuse, and they're way wrong. Now, with the mother-child dynamic between Odo and the female changeling, you might ask, what about in the previous episode where it seemed like they had sex? And it's like, they're mother and child, but they're also a collective species. So it's also like they're supposed to be one being, the lake. But also, she was doing that to Odo to manipulate him. So you can read into it as another form of child abuse. And so when you see a lot of these things, Odo's been through a lot. But as of now, he just keeps it to himself, silently suffering. Sort of how like Nog was. Pretending to be happy until he had to have that moment where Nog got vulnerable and real while an adult parent was punching down at him. We had to sit with that. We also had to sit with these two literal physical children having to grow up much faster than they wanted to be and pretending to be tougher than they actually were and pretending not to be hurt and pretending to be strong. This episode had a lot going on. Not so much in plot, but as far as emotional storytelling and character development, trauma and abuse, and how children are the silent victims we often don't recognize or even recognize we are abusing and often are not even in a position or able to communicate their suffering or even to understand it. Scott, what did you think overall of this episode?
Again, you know what? I'm just going to give it a 4 out of 5 because I think it's important, because it completely changed what we thought about Nog. And I thought that was really special, really some really profound writing. And it gets us maybe a step closer to Odo and Kira figuring stuff out.
Scott, can you tell us about the next episode?
Well, the next episode is called Destiny, and it's not that annoying guy that argues with people on the internet.
Until then,
I hate that guy.
If you like this episode and like what we do, support us on Patreon. We also have the Liberation Martial Arts program if you want to train with us from wherever you are. It's both theory and practice and removes the need for an instructor. What you're learning is how to teach yourself. It's also an approach you can take with you from the gym into the world. Sponsors get a monthly training session with me, either in person or online. Supporting me not only helps me pay my bills, but it also helps me support my family. Find all our links, including Southpaw merch, at southpawpod.com.